All right, Jared C. Willis. Who is Jared C. Willis? Who knows who Jared C. Willis is?
Wilson.
Oh, related to you, Steve.
I have no idea.
January 11th, the year 2019. Does anyone know who this guy is?
Well, Nate's the one that brought this article to us.
Well, if Nate brought the article, you'd think Nate would know that I'm going to ask the question who this guy is. I mean, this guy might be an Episcopalian priest that you're leading us down the road.
You would think one would look this up, but...
One did not.
Do you have a phone with you?
I'm trying to Google it right now.
So the, while they're looking it up, Nate, you want to explain where the article came from?
Well, Brian, I'm glad you mentioned that. I of course went to Desiring God first, so I had six or seven. I was looking at.
There are other websites out there besides Desiring God.
Not to him.
All right. He is the director of content strategy at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri. Managing editor of the website for Gospel-Centered Resources. He's a popular author and conference speaker and blogs regularly at the Gospel Coalition.
Yeah,
that's
pretty good.
Consider yourself.
That's the best you can say.
Well, wait a minute. His bio gets better. Jared is not a catalytic agent of change or a visionary anything. He is a failed church planner and once made a mess of his marriage. He likes food too much and worries way too much about what people think. He's definitely not all that he's cracked up to be. After 25 years of ministry, he's mainly learned that he is kind of a nincompoop. But he loves Jesus.
That's his blog?
Please tell me that's his
bio.
Yes.
That's his bio?
That's
great.
That's his bio intro to his website.
You're welcome.
So Nate reached out to Dave McManus, you know, who we all know and love. And so it's like, Dave, you got anything? So apparently if Google searching's not working for you, you Dave McManus search it.
And this is one of two that he gave me.
Yeah.
So, all right. Want to fatten a church for slaughter, the steps are below. This is a true story.
Yeah, the title's on how to kill a church. Do we say that?
Yeah.
Okay, how to kill a church. Launch a church for people who don't like the church with a dynamic leader with a big ideas and self-help teaching. Should we go on to number two or?
Well, I think maybe we can explain a little more for the reader. So the content is here's a surefire way to ruin your church. And that is start out to launch a church for people who don't like the church with a dynamic leader with big ideas and self-help teaching, which I think is might be a plug on some certain styles of ministry, because it definitely seems like there is a trend today that you have to be a dynamic leader and you're always shooting for the stars and, you know, these major programs, and your teaching is, hey, let's go ahead, here's how to... Your best life now, sort of, or maybe a preaching series on adulting.
I don't know, number one worked for Rick Warren.
It sure did.
I mean, that's basically what he did.
And
he went in the neighborhood and said, "What do you want in the church? And what would make you come to church?" And he was a pretty dynamic leader, and he does a lot of self-help.
Yeah, and so I almost kind of wish he... I don't know if he'll get into it or not, but I kind of wish...
if he'll get into it. He doesn't even write a paragraph. Yeah. I mean,
so... He says how to kill a church. So are you talking about how to ruin your numbers?
We got 12 sources.
Or are you talking about how to spiritually kill your church?
Well, I'm going to guess based on the bio that Jack found and read, and when he said he's a failed church planner, and since this says this is a true story, I'm guessing this is what he tried to do when he started a church and it failed.
Yeah,
possibly.
So he was trying to start a church for obviously people that didn't like church. He's assuming, or he's considering himself dynamic with big ideas, but he was using self-help teaching to try to draw a crowd.
Yeah,
and that backfired and didn't work.
Sure, and what is the reverse to self-help teaching? What's the opposite of it?
Biblical teaching, verse by verse. I mean, this is the narrative of the Bible, whether you're talking a verse by verse exegesis or you're talking a summary of a book or teaching the main themes
of
Scripture.
I went to lunch with a chaplain today that told me that he before he got in the Army, he pastored 6 years, and he got fired from his first church because he was preaching through the book of Genesis, and they didn't want exegesis, so they wanted topical messages being delivered, and they were going to find a preacher that did want it. I think that, I mean, we're going to work through this article, but You know, figuring out what works in a church
is difficult.
It's really hard, Jack. I mean, this idea just being able to give me like 12 sentences,
well, you
and this is some giant help to anybody.
You have such a broad spectrum of what people want.
Yeah, or what they need. How about or what they need, John? I mean, if every single sermon sounds like a exegesis of Wayne Grudem's systematic theology book, then how are
That's
your
tough
people
reading even for studying?
Yeah, well, how are your people that need to learn how to do life well? How are they going to learn to do these things?
I think that's what I've seen in most churches is people want kind of a balance between the two. You know, they want a period of deeper theological study or a service or Bible study that's bent towards that end, and then they want the other times where you're having the parenting class, the financial class from a biblical perspective, you know, those types of things. How do you help me live my life? Yeah, I got it. Jesus died for me, and I can tell you all about Christology, but man, I don't know how to go out and just...
I don't know how to act like a Christian while I'm starting my small business and my business practices.
I don't know how to act like a Christian when I'm standing in the formation and I got a first sermon ripping my face off.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to say, John?
Well, I was going to say, these are, of course, sarcastic. You know, they're the reverse sarcasm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a big part of this. And that also, it has to work on a level of exaggeration. So when he's talking about, you know, dynamic leader with big ideas and self-help teaching, he's not really saying you shouldn't give anything to your congregation. What he's saying is these guys that are pop psychologists that never open the Bible, that they have all the newest terms and reinvent words or you know, ideas from the Bible and just give them new words, marketing ideas. You know, I think he's going to he's reacting to something that's very hyperbolic. It's over the top. I mean, we all would agree that, you know, you need to, when you deliver, even when you deliver a verse by verse exposition, that it's going to help your life, that there are points that intersect in my daily living. And I don't think he's saying that's not the deal. He's saying is these churches that are built on your best life now or those kind of things.
Yeah, are the growing churches in the city, and the guy that's pastoring the other church, John, is comparing his ministry to that and struggling to figure out why are they opening up their sixth satellite campus over there.
Yeah, and I think we certainly have to read all of them to know for sure whether he is talking about, you know, as Bill always used to say, growing a church of 100 to 220, or if he's talking about spiritually, having a large crowd, but spiritually the church is dead. And I would probably lean towards the latter part of this because of the way he's, you know, obviously opened up.
Okay, but again, I would just offer up because, I mean... Don't let Nate pick an article again.
I'm trying to give him a little here or there to see if he can handle it.
I don't know how helpful this is, John, because the brevity it makes it seem so simplistic and what is incredibly complicated because, okay, yes, you are the true church. Praise God, you're the true church. And they're broke, and you have to go get a job because they can't even afford to pay your salary because you're so much the true church. The guy said they went from the church he fired, he went to a church planting, and then they planted a church for 2 years, and then he had to go become a chaplain because they were financially upside down because they couldn't get anyone to give to his lack of growing church.
Oh, certainly. I mean, this plagues me on a regular basis in my lane because... Mm-hmm. I'm very concerned with song selection. I want to select great songs with deep theological content. However, if you do too much of that that the church doesn't know, they're not familiar with, it's like the cycle. They're not going to sing it. You know, they know Amazing Grace, and they know some of the other ones that, in my opinion, aren't as good as some of the other ones that I've come in contact with. However, you've got to play this thing. Okay, it's great, but if they don't sing it, what good is it? You know, so there's got to be some kind of balance, of course, even when you're talking about items that you're including in your service.
Number two.
Care less about biblical depth, discipleship, and leadership character than inspirational messages, excitement, and creativity. Make sure the success is built around the leader's brand so that he and the church are largely synonymous.
once again, this falls into the whole category of why do the nations rage and why do they imagine a vain thing? Because in my estimation, the places that are doing these two things he's already mentioned are huge. I mean, the largest church in America is doing this type of, is this model, that type of stuff. The second largest church is also doing the same thing. The third largest, I looked at a list the other day, you know, of the 10 largest mm-hmm. churches in America. You know, and you got Joel Osteen, of course, by far.
Right.
And Rick Warren we mentioned, and then Andy Stanley. Mm-hmm. And all of those models are, so, you know, I don't know if he's being, like you said, well, we've got the true church of 20.
Yeah, I don't know where he's at on this. I don't know what he's trying to say here.
And of course, maybe
number three is see the place attracts large crowds. What does that even mean?
So now I think from that one we can probably safely assume that he's talking about the spiritual culture of the church and not the numeric numbers or the monetary value.
No, I think he's talking about numeric numbers because as we get farther on,
seriously,
yeah. Because then he says it all crashes.
Number four.
See the success go to the leader's head.
The dot-com boom.
Yes.
So, yes. Well, considering that statement, Doc, with number three, seeing it attract large crowds. So he's like, if you want to kill it, watch it grow, and then watch all that go to the leader's head.
Right.
Because it is developing. And then he goes on, number four, make excuses and accommodations as his short temper, control issues, and lack of accountability begin to take their toll.
Talk about Mark Driscoll.
Of course he is. That's exactly who he
is. That's what this article
is
about.
It is Mark Driscoll.
This is Mars Hill.
This is Mars Hill. That's exactly what this is. Yep. So, I mean,
and perhaps of his own making, Chan. But Chan decided to do that on his own, right?
He left.
Right. I mean, he decided...
Of his own accord.
Yeah, he's like, let's break this thing up. It's getting too big, you know, into regular small churches. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Number five, continue staking everything on a killer weekend experience to the expense of discipleship, community, and mission. Marginalize or get rid of anyone who does not get the vision. Watch the leader eventually crash and burn.
Would he be talking about... is it Mahaney?
C.J. Mahaney?
Is it sovereign? Would he be talking about the Sovereign Grace Network of churches too? In this?
Well, I don't think that Mark Driscoll, and I don't think anybody in Driscoll's team would say that they care less about biblical death, discipleship.
Have you ever watched one of his messages?
Right, exactly.
Or listen to their team saying.
But this is the guy, and if you look at his website banner, I mean, right on his homepage, he looks like a Driscoll wannabe.
Maybe.
So who's he talking about here?
But, I mean, and I understand that perception, Jack, but at the same time, I also want to stop and think, how many pastors in America that would be outside of our Baptist realm, of which we're labeled independent Baptists, we're not a part of an independent Baptist movement, outside of the more conservative Baptist, and maybe some of our Presbyterian brothers, are still wearing suit, jacket, and tie on a Sunday morning to church? I mean, I don't think of the Bible churches I'm that familiar with are that primed towards the formality of dress code, of what used to be Sunday services, that I think even an independent Baptist church out in Vegas that I know of, we've done a podcast on Josh Tice. He's invited to speak at Pensacola Christian College. And Sunday morning, I mean, it's very trendy looking on his platform. So I don't even know that that's necessarily... the surefire sign of this is the direction you're going.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not against jeans.
Me either.
But, you know, yeah, Mark Driscoll's church was very unique. Because, like Brian, as Brian has mentioned, their attire looked very casual and trendy and all of that. But, as you mentioned, Pastor, his messages were filled with expository preaching of great depth.
This can't be Driscoll then, right?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's a cautionary tale.
I think it's...
He says it's a true story. You think it's C.J. Mahaney?
I think it's a merger of all of them.
But they're so small in reality. I mean, C.J., you would never think they're...
Okay,
the Sovereign Grace Churches.
But I think they're a merger of all of them because this guy, I mean, I'm looking at the book list that he's written. He's written a ton of books. I guess you can click on each one, hyperlink, yep, they're hyperlinked, so you can find out what they're about. But I'm looking at the ones that are in the more section. And To Live as Christ, To Die as Gain by Matt Chandler with Jared Wilson. So he's a contributor to Chandler's books, The Explicit Gospel by Matt Chandler with Jared Wilson. So Jared Wilson would be a guy we might see at T4G.
Yeah, he even wrote notes for the ESV Gospel Transformation Bible, which was a pretty cool Bible they gave out a while ago.
On 1 and 2 Peter and Jude in particular, and the ESV Men's Devotional Bible for the Gospel of Luke.
So he's obviously a muckety-muck somewhere. Somebody thinks
ESV, the story Bible. ESV, the story. You're just looking for some to get you out of a hole. ESV, the story Bible. Habakkuk, Malachi, Galatians. So we see that he's got a lot of stuff in here. So no doubt he's probably a fundamental sound guy, but like y'all say, I'm trying to figure out what he's talking about.
I wonder if this is his experience, because I could see a guy who, in his own bio, calling himself a nincompoop, using that verbiage. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, I messed up, but it's almost kind of like I can now make fun of myself on how stupid I was, also writing a blog post about here's what I did to watch, you know.
As the church hemorrhages, attendees who were there for the brand failed to learn your lesson and hire a similarly dynamic leader to replace the one who's fallen. Make sure he's at least nice. But that's not Driscoll, because they didn't do that. Driscoll's ministry just fell apart. Number 8.
Well, before we move on, I mean, you mentioned that even to our church, to make sure that, you know, people are focusing on church attendance and picking a church for the preaching and the teaching of the Word of God, not the personality of the senior pastor. Because you've addressed it, like, that's why we have Sunday evening services, or Wednesday evenings, for them to hear other men open the same Bible and teach, you know, in a similar fashion, that, okay, it doesn't matter which gentleman you're hearing speak, you're going to hear something that's biblically sound from multiple different sources within our ministry. And I mean, I could definitely see that some of those churches are going to be like, no, it's got to be, it's this celebrity guy, and when it's not this celebrity guy, then they're going to bring in someone else. And even the independent Baptist circles that many of us spent years in, like, they're doing the exact same thing. That the name or the personality of the senior pastor is what the church thrives or dies on. Number 8, make sure only yes men ascend to leadership as the new leader tries to rebuild a better version of what crashed the first time.
Number 9, watch the new leader drifts further and further away from biblical teaching, more into the world of quasi-spiritual wanderings. Make sure anyone who sees red flags in occasional New Age-type teaching and embrace heterodox spiritualities can't do anything about it. When those people leave, don't care.
Number 10, watch as liberal theology takes root and slowly drives more and more people out the door. As money dwindles and staff along with it, take no steps to correct course, go all in. Number 11, follow the new kind of Christianity all the way to barely Christian and close the doors on what used to be a thriving megachurch. Number 12, wonder what went wrong. This isn't the only way to kill a church. Some churches dwindle and die through no fault of the leaders. But if you want to kill a church, this is a time-tested way to do it. I wonder if maybe he was the first person out of the shift in leadership that headed towards this church dying.
Where?
I don't know.
Well, that would be he says it's a true story.
Well, we got.
And he said he was a failed church planner, so.
And if you're talking about, like, you know, legitimately walking away from, you know, basic Christianity, we've got that guy that's, you know, gone away from the atonement. I can't remember his name.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and we got Rob Bell. I mean,
yeah,
they both started out as pretty fundamental, if I'm not incorrect.
So what's a young pastor or a pastor that's starting a church plant supposed to focus on to avoid the opposite of killing his church?
Wow.
Because, I mean that's kind of where the article has to point you is...
Yeah, so why didn't he take us there?
Jared, well, this is January 11th, so maybe his...
tomorrow?
Maybe next week's post is the follow-up on this.
Well, if you turn on the third page, he's got, like, a help section. So, like, I think his goal was to kind of give this short, brief way to kill your church, and then here's my opportunity to help you.
Yeah, maybe calling to attention. I mean, maybe he's writing it as a wake-up call to some guys that maybe are following this trend that, okay, if you're one of the individuals that's doing this, pursuing this in your ministry, this should be a red flag to you that, if ignored, you're headed down the path of killing your church.
So your question again, Brian, was what? What should a young pastor focus on if he's doing a church plant?
If, or even a young pastor coming in to take over an established ministry. Because there's going to be, I mean, individuals, regardless of who they are they're going to have vision, they're going to have direction, they're going to have mission, and what they think God is calling them to do, or whether it's a style of preaching, or just progress, or programs and things like that, how a church should be run, polity, all those kind of things. So for someone who's walking into a ministry, if this is what not to do, then what's the flip side of what they should be looking for, or should be trying to do?
All right, so I would throw two things out there, and I think I did one fairly well and the other not well at all. Number one, I would say try to put as much energy and time into developing the best Sunday morning message that you possibly can deliver. And that would be balanced between exegesis of the text and practical application that's relevant, captivating. People are on the edge of their seat wanting to hear the Word of God being delivered as opposed to stories of your life. And then the second thing I would say is somehow you got to balance building relationships with the people in the church. If it's a church of 50, you said taking over a church of 25, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Because they're only going to hear you to the degree to which you have a relationship with them. I mean, there's a degree to which you can speak into people's lives who you don't really have a relationship with. John Piper does it at T4G or something like that. But if you really want to get to the point where your impact in their lives, they got to know that you love them, that you care about them, that you have a genuine and true concern for them. And how are you going to do that if you don't build a relationship with them?
As the saying goes, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
And there's a degree of truth there. I mean, only a degree of truth. John MacArthur had tremendous influence on me on three or four sermons way back in 2003. And I didn't know that John MacArthur for the Man on the Moon, but he really convinced me that exegeting the text in an expository way, week after week, was the only way to really do it right. So I didn't need a relationship with him for that.
Well, I mean, to an extent, yes, but you're also hunting down those sermons, you're listening to that kind of stuff because you already care about bettering yourself. I mean, in the average churchgoer in the pew, I mean, the few people that, you know what, I just love to soak up everything I can about the Bible, those people that are attending church, you know, every time the doors are open, they're listening to podcasts of other preachers that are well-known or former churches that they were at, things like that. Of those few select people are out there. But, I mean, that's what, 3%?
Yeah, it's a small percentage. I mean, I told Bill, I said, Bill, I made a mistake. I put more energy into the visitors than I did just getting to know the congregation. I'm talking about 2006, 2007, 2008. That's what I'm talking about. And because you have in your brain, you're going to build the church. That's what we've been told success looks like, is building the church. If the church doesn't grow under your leadership, then you have the perception that you're a failure. I mean, that's the way we've been conditioned. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's just the reality, and so you try to figure out how am I going to do that?
And especially in a community that takes away 100 church members a year.
Yeah, when I told somebody that at lunchtime that this quarter we lost 31 adults, this quarter alone. This quarter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's incredible.
That's how many people were in church when I visited my parents' home church over the holidays.
Right, so we lost an entire church in 3 months. And so it's an incredible amount of work to continually, John, be attracting new people to your choir because so-and-so's leaving, so-and-so's leaving, so I got to replace an alto, got to replace a bass, got to replace a tenor, and I'm just, for us, growth equals status quo
mm-hmm.
because of the involuntary turnover. Right, and it ain't a backdoor because they're disgruntled. That, that occasionally happens. It's a backdoor because the Army's taking them somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, those are the... I told Bill, I said, Bill, go there and just forget about visitors and put all your energy the first year on just who are the people that voted you in. Mm-hmm. And he's doing a great job of that. Of course Bill is. He's doing a tremendous job of doing that. He's a people person. It comes natural to him. It doesn't come natural to me. I have to work so much harder at it.
So where were, so outside of that, he addresses the pastor's personality, and we all know that that's not your desire, but at the same time, you have people that sit and listen to your sermons, and I just had a membership interview with a prospective church member the other week, and they mentioned about how much they loved your preaching, that you were so passionate, and you know, so involved, and you address it even in your own sermons, that this is why you're so ramped up about this. But anyone that knows anyone else in the room knows that's not my style.
Right.
That's not Steve's style. That's not Nate's style. You know, that's not ours.
Right.
So where does the church go, especially for the church members that are in our ministry listening to our podcast? How do we address people that they started attending or they stuck at Berean because they enjoyed your style, but at the same time, that's not the style of Berean?
Well, hopefully they'll mature to the point where they can be fed from multiple styles, but the truth is that we lose members to the church because of me. Just as much. I mean, it's not just like it's not a positive thing exclusively. There are some people that don't want a passionate preacher. They've never experienced a passionate preacher, and it scares them to death. They feel like it's yelling.
You're mad at them every week.
Right, mad at them every week, yeah. So it's not a positive. It's not something that I'm putting on. I mean, anybody who knows me and has known me my whole life knows that if there's something that I'm passionate about, it comes out. I was passionate about the 82nd Airborne Division. Steve knew me when I was a paratrooper.
Passionate about racquetball.
Right, when we played racquetball, right.
Try to put my eye out.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you don't want your personality to come in, Brian, it comes out.
Yeah.
Everybody's personality comes out. You can't keep your personality from...
Jonathan Edwards did.
Did he have one?
That was the...
I know.
So. I know, and it was just, you know, looking at the things he says, and it's like, okay, so
yeah, obviously you don't embrace liberal theology, I mean, or New Age stuff, or those, follow the new kind of Christianity all the way to barely Christianity and close the doors of what used to be a thriving mega church. I mean, you can even ask the question, can I really be a mega church and be a New Testament church? I mean, for example, how does a mega church practice church discipline? How do you practice church discipline if you have multiple campuses?
It'd be very hard.
Don't you think, Jack?
It'd be very hard.
To that extent, you'd have to have each individual campus almost running autonomously.
Oh, then it wouldn't be a mega church. It'd be a bunch of... Yeah. Right? I mean, think about that.
Well, what you'd end up doing is you'd end up where you have these guys, and they do this, is they have these campus pastors.
Yeah, I know several of them for the mega church next door.
But the campus pastors are nothing more than your local constable. if they're going to do church discipline, they're just a police force to make sure that the building's not tore up while the video's playing, to make sure that things aren't going wrong, mm-hmm. and if something sinful is really happening, to make sure that it gets taken care of so the church as a whole isn't disgraced.
And if you need a pastor while you happen to be at that site, you have some.
Plus, this isn't a disgrace.
Okay. Yeah, I can't really, and certainly not an expert, but know a little bit, but I can't think of a mega church that really emphasizes church membership and as a two-way commitment. I think that many might emphasize church commitment as far as, church membership as far as, you know, you're a member of our church, so we're going to count you so that we have this big number. But as far as you're making a commitment to the church covenant and we're going to hold you to that, I really can't think of a large ministry that does that, nor really could it, because mm-hmm. that becomes quite... an untenable. It's just, yeah. You cannot you know, that kind of organization is just insane. I mean, it's difficult with the number that we have.
Oh yeah,
Doc. What was
and
it like up in Hiles?
We certainly have folks who fall through the cracks, no doubt.
Because I mean, Hiles Anderson here, First Baptist Church, Hammond, Indiana. That's about as close as independent Baptist is going to ever get to mega church.
It was a mega church.
I mean, Highland Park was the same way, but I would argue that they didn't have the expectation of members to do. You know, there was no church
as long as they were dressed properly on Sunday.
Well, I mean, the only kind of discipline ever was if a leader got into trouble. You know, but you know, Joe Blow in the pew. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, First Baptist had membership, and basically it was the walk down the aisle, yep, and join, and you know, are you saved, you baptized, shake your hand, okay, you're in.
Yep.
But I don't remember anybody ever really being voted out.
And Highland Park even counted all of the churches that were all over Chattanooga and the world as part of their membership.
And the world.
So missionaries that they supported, they counted their attendance as part of their attendance so they could claim we had 40,000 members.
Missionaries.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, First Baptist didn't do that, but they did count like all their bus, all their...
Yeah, you know, all their no, I know they did that, and I've heard, I don't want to use the word horror stories, but I've heard stories about, you know, how their bus ministry and things like that were ran, and sometimes they were just over the top, to say. Oh, yeah. But just didn't know, because you would think, I mean, that is as conservative as they were, that they would have had some sort of line. But even, you know, trying to think back to my days when I was at Pensacola Christian College, I mean, I was in the church there, but they counted the students when they were physically there, but I mean, membership wasn't an automatic thing for a student, and they had membership. If they had membership meetings, they were held on like a different day where you had to come out to the campus separately to participate in them, because they weren't church services or anything like that. Or, you know, if all non-members, please be dismissed. But they never had anything like that. What do you think of your article, Nate?
A lot of good discussion out of this article.
At what point do you think that you'll transition to saying intelligent things during the podcast? At some point,
that's hard. It may be years.
You're such a kind person.
It's that personality that everybody just
makes sure the next guy is nice.
Unbelievable. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day.